I have a keen sense of what is and is not important, of what is right and wrong, good and bad. And this does not align with, you know, my feelings around right and wrong, good and bad. You know, I'm offended by the idea that you don't think you can trust me, or that this doesn't feel like I love you, when there's this mountain of evidence over here that I do all of this for you, and then you're going to get on me about this. Like, that is the common refrain of relationship partners, you know, worldwide.
I know you are doing the best that you can right now. Your relationships matter to you. You are important. And yet, over time, we get stuck. We get lost, or we stop showing up as our true self. We get hung up on the stories we tell ourselves, the comparisons, or feeling like we are not good enough. I'm Not Your Shrink is a podcast aimed at helping you feel connected to yourself, to others, and to live a life that is in line with what matters most to you. I'm Dr. Tracy Dalgleish, clinical psychologist and couples therapist. I bring you clinical knowledge and evidence-based research, experiences of sitting in the therapist chair, and being a wife and mother to talk about everyday issues we all face to help you change the dialogue in your life. Let's dive in. I have been so excited to have this conversation since the moment I saw the book on the bookshelves, which is, This is How Your Marriage Ends. Today, I am sitting with Matthew Frey. He is a relationship coach and author who leans on the lessons of his failed marriage and divorce to help others avoid making the same mistakes he did. Frey has appeared in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Atlantic, the Sunday Times, on ABC's Tamron Hall Show, and in several other places. And most importantly, also on his blog, where he is sharing his words, his coaching, and his wisdom with all of us. I've got the links in the show notes. Be sure to check it out. But I am so excited to share this conversation with you. I've got tingles after being able to sit with Matthew Frey. So I hope you enjoy this one. Matthew, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. I can't tell you how excited I am to have this conversation with you.
Thank you. It's really nice to be here. Thanks for asking.
It's so interesting because in this field, in the therapist world, we know that there tend to be more women. And also we know that there tend to be more women speaking out about how to build healthy, strong relationships. And so when I saw your book out, when I saw Here we get the other perspective, I can't tell you how excited I was. So before we start, let's catch everybody up and maybe you can tell us a little bit about you.
I mean, yeah, sure. My name is Matthew Frey. I'm a relationship coach and now author. At the time of this recording, actually, the paperback version of the book launched today.
Fantastic. Oh my goodness. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. Where the hardback came out in March of last year. What happened basically was my marriage ended painfully and unceremoniously. And I don't want to say that I didn't see it coming, because there was this slow descent, as I personally believe most marriages that end have a slow descent sort of cadence for them. But I didn't have like a frame of reference at the time to understand what I was doing to contribute, what she may or may not have been doing. I didn't understand anything. I didn't understand how to repair. So I was busy feeling sorry for myself and not doing anything that I should have been doing to rebuild trust and to reconnect within my relationship. She left. I felt like a victim. It was really, really difficult. And the, you know, short story long or long story short version of it is that I was finally advised to write, because I had been a air quotes professional writer as a journalist and someone who worked in marketing a little bit. And so I started writing. But I think what the therapist that I'd spoke to had been encouraging me to do was like journal, because I really truly understand today the value of that process. But what I chose to do instead was like launch a blog and sort of write for public consumption, and accidentally grew an audience. Mm-hmm. Sort of the magic of social media and the internet is that, you know, people were interested in the same subject matter. So I've been getting the same feedback for a decade now. And that feedback is, Matt, you seem to describe my marriage. And I just had come to believe that there's so many universal themes relationally that I accidentally appealed to a lot of people, not to intention, but because I'm part of the statistical norm. And my willingness to sort of put that out there as honestly and you know, vulnerably, so to speak, as possible, I think like attracted some people anyway. So a couple of years ago, I had the opportunity to write a book, and it's a miracle that I get to work with live human beings. I still sort of scoff at the notion that the divorced guy is in any position to be advising people on their marriages, but I seem to have a gift for occasionally breaking through and saying it in a manner in which the one of the partners, most often the male partner in male-female relationships, identifies with like the way that I talk about it. And yeah. So I'm able to like help that way. Right. I'm able to be somewhat of a translator. And it's really useful when two partners are having the same conversation.
And let's just call this out loud that, you know, whatever term you want to use, the expert, the coach, the therapist, that person is going to be objective and outside of what you are working on with someone else. So having had a divorce does not indicate in any way that you should not be working with couples in some way, right? Like, let's just dispel that. I have a book coming out this fall, and I am sharing with people that, gosh, we had kids and we struggled in our marriage in ways that I never thought that we would. And here I am, the couples therapist, with the decade of training behind me, with over 10 years of working with couples, 15 years of working with couples. And here I am saying, how did I end up resenting my husband so much in this season? Right. So I think that is so important for us to just call out. But you touch on something right there that I even want to say for the listeners to understand this is that so many of us walk around thinking, this is just me. I am the only one experiencing this. No one is talking about that. And yet, I mean, this is not meant to minimize, invalidate, or dismiss someone's experience, but we actually are not that unique in what we struggle with. And so the themes you talk about are so powerful that this is what people experience.
Thank you. The great Brené Brown is the human who, not personally, she does not know I exist, but like through her work has really taught me that value of shared experience, shared connection, empathy, this notion of, you know, I don't feel alone. And I can either experience that through, you know, care. I did. When I started blogging and I had the feedback, that's when I had my cathartic moment of, oh my gosh, I'm not alone. Like, I'm not the only one. And there was so much power to me in the experience of I'm not alone that I heard reading certain books, but most importantly, getting feedback from blog readers. And then I've really come to believe that that is perhaps the most significant or impactful gift, if you will, that my work has provided anyone over the last decade, is I can write a story that feels so similar, whether it is the person on the receiving end of the treatment or the person that, and again, I know that there's a huge spectrum of choice and awareness and behavior and relationships, but I really try to give people the benefit of the doubt and believe strongly that the great majority of married people very much want to be married and don't want to hurt their partner.
Of course.
But we do it anyway.
We do.
I've worked really hard at language around so many men feel closed off and feel defensive and feel unfairly attacked and misunderstood. And that's certainly how I felt in my relationship. And one of my favorite things to talk about is how to get over our defensive / invalidating tendencies by defending ourselves all the time. Mm-hmm. We didn't have to do anything bad. We didn't have to be bad. We don't even have to be wrong in order to do or say something that inadvertently hurts someone else, or that inadvertently, I think specifically, communicates, I care more about everything I think and feel in my experiences than I care about everything you think and feel in your experiences, which I believe is the math result of the behavior that I quote unquote coach about in my work. We deliver the message that I matter more to me than you matter to me.
Inadvertently.
Yeah, absolutely.
When we get defensive, that's what ends up happening.
It doesn't work very well in relationships that require trust.
No. You know, one of the common repeating, so let me back up. Matthew, most of my listeners here are women. And I know, I just know, and I hope so, that they're going to put this on for their partners as well. And so being in this, I'm not your shrink position, I get to step out of my therapist chair and actually show up as human. And that's really important for me. So I do talk about my marriage in that way. And I have my husband, Greg, I have his permission to say this. And we've had a whole defensiveness episode where he comes in as my defensive expert. He says, I am the defensive expert here. And we've had this conversation. And early on in our relationship and in our marriage, I found myself saying, I hear you say that you feel like you are not good enough. That's not what I'm saying. I hear you get defensive, and I'm not saying that. And if that's the piece where you feel like you're not good enough, let's talk about that piece later. But right here, when I say, I need help managing the house and the kids, I'm not saying you're not good enough. I'm not saying you're not doing enough. You're not a good, worthy individual here in this relationship. But goodness, your defensiveness just creates this roadblock for us and ends up invalidating, dismissing, and minimizing all of my experience, which is challenging, right? And that in itself, that is not unique. I see that repeatedly over and over again in my therapy room. And I know you work with couples in that same space.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the number one. When I say number one, I don't necessarily mean I think it's the most important. I think it's the thing that happens most often. And in my estimation, the priority item to recognize and try to sort out relationally is, and I don't think there's a simpler way to say it, at least not that I've found yet, than I have to have a successful conversation. A relationship partner must be able to tell the other relationship partner they're having a problem, that something's bad for them, painful. Right. Sad,
not working,
stressful, something that's a negative, right. Meaningfully negative experience. They need to be able to say that to the other person and then have it work out for them afterward. And it's remarkable how often that doesn't happen.
Support for today's episode comes from Cozy Earth. You know I am all about caring for ourselves, especially in these busy years with our young kids. We are pulled in so many directions. But I think it's so important for us to find ways to nurture ourselves that require no additional time from us. I should probably let you in on one of my favorite things to do to look after me, and that is to get a good night's sleep on amazing sheets. I am beyond thrilled to bring you Cozy Earth's luxurious bedding products with an exclusive Mother's Day offer just for my listeners. We've got a code. It's SHRINK, S-H-R-I-N-K, for 35% off at CozyEarth.com. Now, I didn't believe it until I tried them, but I firmly stand by my sleep improving with the temperature regulating technology, which adapts to your body's needs. For the past year, I have not slept on any other brand of sheets. Cozy Earth uses the very best fabrics, materials, and wares, offering superior softness for you to sink into at the end of those long days. I look forward to getting into bed, and we've been loving the sheets for over a year, and their sleepwear is so unbelievably soft, and it's made with such great quality. But the best part is that if you're worried about commitment, enjoy a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty on all of your purchases. Head over to CozyEarth.com and use promo code SHRINK for an exclusive 35% off, and give the luxury she deserves with Cozy Earth. Support for today's episode comes from Loop Earplugs. Driving in the car with the dog whining and the kids fighting in the backseat is my definition of overstimulation. And the more overstimulated I become, the more irritable I am, and then I am not the mom I want to be. So I decided to give Loop earplugs a try, and I'm so glad I did. I was blown away by how comfortable they are and just how adjustable they are for my individual needs. I also love that they're stylish in my ears and not some big chunky piece. I've been using the Loop Engage, which focuses on decreasing the amount of noise around me, whether I'm in the car with the kids or if I'm at the show. I love this option because I don't want to miss out on what's happening around me, but sometimes I just need a little bit of support. Plus, we love their kids' version, which we were able to take to the movies for our highly sensitive child. I'm so excited that Loop Earplugs is offering you, my community, a discount so that you too can tackle those overstimulating moments while also still being engaged with the activities and the people you love. Visit loopearplugs.com and use my exclusive code LOOP
times Dr. Tracy for 10% off your order. That's LOOPXDRTRACY for 10% off your order at loopearplugs.com.
The habit workout piece, I think, is so important for us to define, because it doesn't mean that your partner says, you're right, I should be making, I'll just kind of stick with the dishes and the meal, right? You're right, I should be doing the dishes every single night and make sure the kitchen is completely spotless and do your 100 checklist the exact way that you want me to do it, right? That's not what that means, right? But it means that I'm going to show up and see you and see my impact on you and see what your experience is like, so that then we can compromise, negotiate, co-create what we're trying to do here. Yeah.
Yeah. You say it so much more effectively than I do, but absolutely. I always communicated, you know, I like to tell first person stories, not to make it about me, but to demonstrate a lack of judgment for everything that
a
client is trying to communicate to me.
Yeah.
She could not tell me something was wrong, that she was sad or hurt or angry or stressed because of something I was doing. If I didn't agree that she should, if I thought she shouldn't think or shouldn't feel the way she was, we never got anywhere. And it took me years after my marriage ended, I don't know, 3, before I really recognized just how trust eroding and how painful and damaging that was. That if I didn't agree with my wife, if I didn't share her feelings or share her thoughts about a particular event, or about just anything, any sort of decision or shared responsibility within the home, she didn't have an ally. Like she.
Are you saying agreeing or validating? Can we pull those apart a little bit?
Oh, by all means. Because I don't think agreement is required. I really don't. And I try to communicate that over and over again to the people that I'm talking to, that it does not require agreement. But can you, if somebody's telling you something bad is happening to them, and you abandon them to manage that alone over and over again, simply because you don't agree that the problem's the problem. You just don't have like similar like wavelength about it. I don't know that it's empathy. I think there's some element of empathy that's useful, certainly, but I just think the simplest way is people I love, when bad things happen to them, I don't have to agree that they're bad in order to show up for them and like participate in a supportive partner way. That's the conclusion of like that aspect of my coaching work, where I'm really trying to work on mindful validation of other people, that, you know, we don't have to agree that the dish by the sink, in the context of, you know, some of my stories, that the glass I used to leave by the sink, we don't have to agree on what we should or shouldn't do with it, or whether it's legitimately painful or important or not, in order to mindfully consider how someone else experiences it when they walk in the room to find it there. And I've taken to probably overusing peanut allergy analogies in order to talk about this. Mm-hmm. You know, I can think peanuts are delicious and I can think peanuts are harmless, because they're both of those things to me. And they're both of those things, I think, to the statistical majority of humans. But I just can't fathom being the kind of person who would discover that a friend or a romantic partner or one of my children has a severe allergy, a potentially fatal one, and then not mindfully navigate my life moving forward to account for that. You know, to treat them as stupid or wrong or weak simply because their experience with this delicious snack food is so different than mine. And I really try to talk about that, because I don't think it's a radical departure from the conversations we're having relationally. One is just a little bit about health and a lot about health. But the other is really more nuanced, but it doesn't mean it doesn't hurt the same.
Right. And the piece there is you're not having to give up eating delicious peanut snacks in your spare time. But when you go over to be in their world, you're considering them, you're validating their difficulties, you've washed your hands, you're making sure you don't have peanuts all over your, you know, now I need to go eat some Reese's peanut butter cups. They're my favorite. But right, like this is the piece here. is this like consideration and validation. And I know those are two big pieces you talk about. I have this quote that I read from your piece in The Atlantic that I think is so important. And it's something that I talk about frequently from the position that I work with. You said, "The things that destroy love and marriage often disguise themselves as unimportant. Many dangerous things neither appear nor feel dangerous as they're happening. They're not bombs and gunshots. They're pinpricks. They're paper cuts." And that is the danger. When we don't recognize something as threatening, then we're not on guard. And that's what that water glass is. That's what that invalidation, that moment where you're on your phone and your partner walks in the room and you don't look up. That's the paper cut. That's the death by 1,000 paper cuts in a relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. So, right. I hope that's obvious to everybody listening. When I talk about just how critical of an idea that is, that it's so dangerous to not know what will hurt you later. I mean, you can apply it to like health. Right. You know, it's so dangerous to not know that cigarette smoking can cause, you know, can lead to lung cancer, or that an extremely unhealthy diet can lead to heart disease or whatever. You know, we have the gift of awareness around that now. And then a lot of people armed with that information have made different choices than we societally made 40, 50, 60 years ago around like those same subjects. And I don't think this is radically different from that. We have these things that might appear benign to most people, these subtle disagreements around parenting and shared domestic responsibility and what it means to be supportive to a relationship partner. It's so easy to dismiss it as unimportant. And I really think that even today. I have a client who was in special forces, like militarily overseas. And the things he's done, experienced, the people he's held, you know, while losing them, it's really hard for him to elevate the metaphorical glass by the sink to something that is really significant, because he feels like he's really lived through something really significant. And he acknowledges that, right, in his conversations with his partner.
So it's like, how can you complain to me about the glass when I've done all of these other things in my life? Like, I've experienced that real trauma. This glass by the sink doesn't matter, right? Like that, I think that's often what our soldiers can bring home with them. Yeah. These painful traumatic experiences. Yeah.
And I really truly believe like virtually every human in their invalidation, so long as they're not doing it in a mindfully manipulative way, is bringing that same thought process to the table. Mm-hmm. I have a keen sense of what is and is not important, of what is right and wrong, good and bad. And this does not align with, you know, my feelings around right and wrong, good and bad. You know, I'm offended by the idea that you don't think you can trust me, or that this doesn't feel like I love you, when there's this mountain of evidence over here that I do all of this for you, and then you're going to get on me about this. Like, that is the common refrain of relationship partners, you know, worldwide, when they feel a little bit unfairly criticized, and when they tend to be, the switch hasn't turned on. They have a lot of blind spots around the ways their behavior inadvertently adversely affects the other. And then they have a lot of blind spots around how their inability to repair these little moments conversationally, which I put under the umbrella of validation in the context of my coaching work, just how significant like that is to the long-term viability of a marriage.
Let's break those apart, because I know there's a dynamic. I'm asking you these really big questions, and so I know we're not getting to the crux of what you do with people, but just for the listeners, the person who says, and I'm going to use he and she nags me. She always tells me that, you know, the water glass is right by the sink, or I didn't finish wiping the counter. It's always telling me, and yet she discounts everything else that I do. What do you do with that partner? And what do you do then with the other partner? Like, what is your top piece of advice for each of those partners? The other partner who says he just can't help out, and it's like the simplest thing. Why can't he do that?
I would like to be very upfront about the fact that I try really hard never to do anything couples related. And when I do it, I'm talking to each individual separately.
Of course. Of course.
So I do have this conversation, right? I'm not qualified to be a couples person.
So we're I get it. We're doing it separate.
Yeah,
totally
thank
get that.
You. I just wanted to like say that and acknowledge.
I've got my couples hat on over here. I'm in my dynamics.
95% of the time, I am talking to the person who was in my role.
Okay.
I'm not inclined to, I feel woefully unqualified to communicate to, let's say, a mother of three who's super stressed and who feels alone in her marriage and alone in a lot of ways in parenting and maybe a little bit undesired and definitely disrespected and totally invisible and that she has an inability to communicate that something's wrong. Because every single time he suggests that what he thinks and feels is so superior to hers that he's not going to do anything different tomorrow. He knows he's okay. He knows she's overreacting and unfairly criticizing him. It's not going to get better tomorrow. And that is, in my estimation, the ingredients for the slow down. I try very, very hard not to get into the business of identifying all the ways in which she can be a better relationship partner. I'm confident there are ways. And the if I'm going to go there, my highest piece of advice, and I want to put a caveat or an asterisk by this one too, is to be very mindful of delivery. Whether it's tone, whether it's timing, but I also hate telling hurt people not to act hurt. It feels, you know, it's like, I'm hurting you. This is what I did to my wife. I was hurting her. I was a little bit unaware of the severity of it and the dynamics. I truly was blind to the toxic cycle that I was stuck in. And then again, she's trying to like request help from me, recruit me to be on her side. And over again, things I said and did communicated to her that I wasn't on her side, that I was on my side. And that if you want to be together, you have to come over. You have to come over to my side because I'm not coming to yours.
There was no we.
Yeah, that's what I did. And I didn't see it. And so for the guys, again, the 95% that I'm working with, the vast majority of the time, is this person who doesn't think the dish by the sink is important and feels unfairly criticized. And really, this is the best way I know how to say it today. So I wrote this article called She Divorced Me Because I Left Dishes by the Sink back in 2016. It's easily the most popular thing I've ever read. It's the only thing that ever went quote unquote viral and was read millions of times.
And I can't tell you how many kitchen stories I've heard from couples. Sure. So, right. Sure. Where we live, and it doesn't, and I want people to hear this. It can be anything. It can be the way your partner happens to clear their throat in the morning. It can be the way something is chopped or something left at the sink or not doing the dishes or the shoes at the door, right? So it's just these small things that amount to something bigger, which is what we're talking about. Sorry, go ahead.
No, thank you. No, it's a fabulous interjection. Totally agree. And instantly, as you're going through that list, I'm thinking of the guy who kicked the dog gate at the bottom of his stairs every time he went up to his bedroom and it drove his wife crazy. And the woman that I actually wrote about in the book that would cry while folding laundry because the dehumidifiers weren't emptied, even though her husband promised he was going to stay on top of that. And there's all of these domestic scenarios that communicate this idea. So, right. I had a glass by the sink. I used it to quickly put water in it and take vitamins or medicine, things like that in the morning. And I would just leave it by the sink and then, you know, go off to work. And eventually we started having conversations around that. And it truly wasn't this end all be all like conflict in my marriage, but it did represent 100% the conversation we have over and over again about, again, insert any subject here in which I weren't quite on the same page on. I didn't think it was a big deal. I did want to honor her sense of like cleanliness and organization. And so my promise to her was always like, how about when guests come over, there's never a glass sitting on the counter. We're keeping a tidy home. But when it's just you and I, the glass is there. Like, is that okay? Like, I'd rather do that. And whatever. She didn't like it. We talked about it. I wrote this article later, and a bunch of guys, because they've been on the receiving end of this conversation, the receiving end being my end, and they're angry with me, right? They feel like I've betrayed like their ideology and that I've switched sides. I actually had someone say, way to go, Matt, way to betray your gender, which I think is ridiculous.
Oh my goodness.
I'm not on anyone's side here. I'm on the side of people who want to be married, remaining married. That's whose side I'm on.
I'm trying to so from my female perspective, I'm trying to understand how you've betrayed them, because you said, "Oh, okay, I'm clicking on because it's the you're saying this is how you will get divorced." Is that you Yeah, is that what they perceived from the article?
I mean, I have no idea. I mean,
hey, you know, that's always a projection. It's the inner projection of their own discomfort onto you. And how dare you state this? Because that is the reflection inside of them of, what is it, a loss of power or a desire for control or all of those things.
I'm guilty of cynically believing a lot of them are like maladjusted men's rights activists who have a problem mentally and emotionally with people who don't share their gender. It's wild, the power trip. A lot of people simply ask me what I do think is a fair question. Matt, why don't your feelings about the glass being there in a marriage that's equal, in a partnership that's supposed to be equal, why don't your feelings, your opinions, your wants rise to the level of your wife's? Like, why does she have to win? Why can't your way, right? And they're thinking certainly about their own marriages and their own little debates and their own little preferences. And and I hear that. And it took me years really to come up with an answer I felt comfortable saying. And the following is that answer. I do think my feelings in a relationship matter just as much as someone else. 100% my wants and needs are equally relevant to my relationship partners. And I believe this is true of every honest relationship between two people who genuinely love one another and want to make it work. Nobody's winning. Here's what I believe is the key difference between my wife and I around this glass by the sink. When I walked into the kitchen to take vitamins, to take medicine, and the glass was not by the sink, no amount of pain was experienced. Nothing hurt. I went into the cabinet, I got a glass, I did the thing. I went into the dishwasher, got a glass, did it. Everything was fine. When my wife walked into the kitchen and found the glass there, she did experience pain. And a lot of people scoff at this idea. Well, Matt, how could a glass sitting by the sink legitimately hurt somebody? That's just absurd. Well, because the glass sitting there meant one of two things. It meant I put it there because I'm going to do what I want. You're not my mom. You're not my boss. I'm going to do what I want to do. And your thoughts and feelings, frankly, don't matter near as much to me as mine do.
At the core, she doesn't feel important and seen and understood.
I'll do this over and over again because I want to. And your experience with it is of little consequence to me. It could have meant that, which is really, by the way, I think that's like the most awful. That's like the worst version of it. And I don't think it's the one that's true most of the time. But here's the other one. Or it could mean my wife walking into the kitchen and finding the glass there, that I never thought about her at all. Like, I was so busy going about the business of my life that I thoughtlessly just sort of like took a drink, threw it there, you know, ran out the door to get to the office on time. And that for certain is symbolically what most of the things in our relationship were. This just me just living and failing to notice how things I did or did not do might have rolled downhill and inadvertently impacted her.
And Rose. That is painful. Then why are we in this relationship? Then I don't even exist beside you. Then I'm just a warm body beside you, right? Like these are the, yeah.
I hurt you on purpose because I choose me over you, or I hurt you by accident because you weren't important enough to remember or think about it all. Mm-hmm. And I just think that is the unintended consequence of sort of thoughtlessly just going about your day in a shared life with someone else, failing to accept responsibility for these little grievances that the other person might have about something. There's just a real danger in communicating something that you don't intend to communicate.
Can I tell you my soap story?
By all means.
This is the other side. I'm the other side from you. And my husband and I, we share our bathroom and everything in is free range for whoever to use. And my soap is in there and he leaves the cap open, or he squeezes it in such a way that for me, in order to get soap out, I have to shake it really hard to be able to get my own soap out, or it dries out, or he leaves this much left. And so that I'm left with no soap in the bathroom. And for years, I kept saying, do something with the soap. And it came out in all of these different ways. And of course, doing the work I'm doing, I understand that it's not really about the soap. And so one day I sat down with him and I said, I've got to tell you about the soap. Because when you use the soap, I am reminded of what it was like as a child with my sister, who's 5 years older than me, and she would use my things without asking me. She would take it without asking me. And that was painful for me because I never felt respected. And so today, when you use the soap, I'm brought right back to that little girl who didn't feel like she had her own space, where she felt like she was important enough to have things on her own and to be respected. And when I was able to connect that deeper meaning of I'm not feeling respected and this is painful for me, he got it. It's like, oh, yeah, okay, the soap, I get it, right? But for years, I had just been saying, you left the soap cap out. And Matthew, I even went so far, I'm not proud of this, to remove the soap one day. I was like, you know what? I've had it. I'm taking my soap out of the shower so that you don't have soap to use. That'll teach you. And then it did it because the next time I went in, I had no soap. I forgot to grab it. So, you know, it's this like, what's the underlying piece here? What are those hard, painful feelings that if we don't enter into our own vulnerability, work on how we communicate it to the other person so that they can understand it and to help them see what it is that we need, right? And I say that so often in my community, it's not about the dishes. It's not about the soap in the bathroom. It's what you're saying is your wife said you didn't think about me. And that's so painful.
Yeah. And again, the other pillar of my work besides validation is this idea of consideration.
Yes. Tell us more about that piece.
We can be inconsiderate selfishly, or we can be inconsiderate. I think most of the time it's thoughtlessly. It's this
absent-mindedly, autopilot.
Lack of awareness as to what matters to the other person. And that's why I think this like validation piece is so critical. Like when my partner comes and says something's wrong, if I don't engage in that conversation and seek to understand what the problem is, like, right, my initial reaction is that this is an unfair or unreasonable or nonsensical reaction or interpretation of what I did, and I'm feeling defensive and I'm wanting to correct her on some level. If I just do the work of understanding, one, I'm so sorry that a bad thing just happened to you, right? I'm really sorry. Like, and I thank you for making me aware of it. Instead of, I'm so angry, you're like blaming me for all of your pain. I want people I love to communicate that I'm hurting them if I'm hurting them. Mm-hmm. I really like them to believe that I would never do it on purpose. And the only way I think to realistically achieve that is when I do inadvertently hurt them, that they share it with me. And then I take that in and make sure that tomorrow and next week and next month and next year, I'm not doing things that hurt them in that same way anymore. Mm-hmm. Because they matter enough to me to protect. I mean, I really think that is like the nature of consideration in a nutshell.
And that requires us to just slow down a little bit, to be in this moment, to be present, to think of self and other in that.
I think your soap story is so great. If I was working with your husband or a relationship partner that was the equivalent of, you know, your husband in the story, I would really want like him to apply meaning to that in the way that I talked about with the glass. You know, like, honoring the soap situation is communicating, I love you. It's communicating like you mattered to me and I would never allow you to like step into this bathroom and find evidence that I don't. It takes the work of like connecting those two things. I really appreciate the deeper meaning connection that you brought up around your youth. And if I may like interject like my own version of that, my ex-wife was the baby of the family. It was family of four, mom, dad, older brother, younger sister. And so she's the baby. And she felt her entire life like her vote didn't matter.
Oh.
Right? When she had a contribution for what the family should do on Friday night, Saturday night, where to go on vacation, she had the least influential voice. And it really frustrated her. And she told me stories like that when we first got together and when we were younger. And I just didn't have a mature enough headspace and emotional wherewithal back then to really absorb that and apply it to other life things. But undoubtedly, my wife discovering that she was feeling the same way in our marriage that she did when she was being talked down or ignored or whatever she felt whatever she felt by mom, dad, and big brother. I really wish I had the insight and the maturity, frankly, intellectually and emotionally to get that that's what I was doing to her, was just more of this thing that she experienced really negatively growing up. And I bet virtually everyone in every relationship can find some story like that.
Oh, if absolutely.
They dig deep enough, sure. And things you probably help people find that I
absolutely
know how to do that work.
And we all come to that though, right? In the sense that our earlier experiences, whether it's with a significant partner, whether it's with that best friend in grade five or with our parents somewhere along the way, is that we do have experiences. And these are not, we don't have to call them traumas, but these are moments of maybe emotional neglect, if that word feels okay, which means like your emotions weren't seen repeatedly over and over again, where, you know, the value of the family, which was, let's say, parents decide where we go on the weekend, just thinking of your ex-wife's example, parents decide where you go on the weekend and kids don't have a voice, that maybe doesn't match with what you need, right? So there's a mismatch in needs and environment that you grow up in. And I think there's two pieces here. One, how you and I are talking about, how can we then do this and validate, like this validation and consideration piece in our marriages? Because that is the trust that we need. We need that respect. And just as a side note, I will never forget receiving this DM on Instagram. I don't give advice on DMs on Instagram, but I see all the messages that come in. And this one person said, my husband left his beer bottle on the coffee table. And when I said, can you pick it up? He said, that's not my responsibility, or that's not my job, or something like that. And she's like, what do I do? And I said, I don't give advice, but I will reflect this back to you. That sounds like this is an issue more about respect, not about who does what with the beer bottle. This is respect, right? I digress. Okay, back to this point though, is that in our relationships, that I know you rolled your eyes. I was like,
that man, like, yeah, low tolerance for that guy.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, if you're in my room, I'm gonna call you out on that. But our relationships also reflect back to us the stuff that we are working through. And so we choose this partner thinking, you're not like what I experienced growing up. You're not like those other relationships. I've chosen you because you're completely different. And then we find out down the road that these patterns are actually repeating, and they are a space for us. They're mirrors for us to work through these unmet needs from other relationships. So my responsibility then, because again, relationships are self, other, and the dynamic, right? My responsibility then with Greg is not just to go to him to tell me that I'm valid and that I matter and to fill up my cup. I also have to do that. He's just going to be that reflection back to me of, do I matter? Okay, part of it is, yes, our attachment bond and security, and he can be there to support me. But then I also have to do that internal work myself to be like, hey, you know what? I do matter. I do deserve to have things respected. And I am important here. And you know, all of that, right? So it's complex in relationships.
It really is. We often will get to a place in my conversations that I'm having privately with my clients where we get to that. And I have to say things like, hey, like, she might have some individual work to do, but I don't feel like I'm not any position to offer like prescriptive advice there.
Uh-huh.
Like, can you just love her in the manner that she needs to be loved? And maybe when a sufficient amount of safety and trust exists, a sufficient amount of prayer exists, then you can start to ask for things. Mm. Because you get a lot of defensive yeah buts and you know, what aboutism? You know, what about all these
what
things?
What aboutism? Yeah, right? You know, we haven't even thrown in sex in this conversation, because we both know, and I know you talked about this in your book, is that men will show up saying, she doesn't want to have sex with me anymore.
Yeah.
And she's changed. And yet,
I trust you to communicate this better than I can. But, you know, he feels rejected. He feels, okay, like I used to be wanted. I used to be loved.
Uh-huh.
Like she used
desired.
To want to be with me. Yeah. Yeah. And now it's clear she doesn't feel those things.
Uh-huh.
And I try really hard to reframe those things that, you know, she wants to. And that's when I start talking about, you know, safety and trust. And I don't know if you recall, and I don't know if you agree with it, but I love leaning on the model of Maslow's hierarchy of needs as as just sort of like a loose model for, I just think it's useful.
No, 100%.
Thinking about like relational needs. And if you can provide basic needs and you can provide a sufficient sense of safety, well, then you can connect with the human being. And this is why it's so easy when we're like in the early stages of a relationship, that almost always, assuming there isn't major trauma between, you know, one of the individuals or both of them, it's just easy to connect in that way.
So and, easy. And yes.
We paper cut ourselves or them over time through these little micro, I don't know if betrayal is too dramatic of a word. While I didn't interpret putting the glass by the sink as a betrayal to my wife, she experienced it as betrayal because Matt's either doing this on purpose because he doesn't care about me, or Matt's doing this totally thoughtlessly because I'm not important enough to even think about and consider. Either of those is a betrayal of the promise that I feel was made to me when he said, I do. And again, reasonable minds can sort of disagree with whether that glass by the sink indicates that, whether it qualifies as a betrayal, but I've really come to that it is. I do qualify it with that word micro.
Yes, yes,
of course. Because I do think there's degrees of betrayal.
100%.
But it's the little ones that I think are so scary and set us up for the big ones. You know, 10 years of micro betrayals. So that man we were just talking about that doesn't feel desired. And I unfortunately had this conversation with the female partner this morning in a male-female relationship in a marriage. You know, he was feeling that way for like 3 years. And then he went and formed a intimate kinship with someone else. And, you know, she's now trying to work through, basically she is behaviorally like, you know, I was relationally, you know, she is more emotionally closed off. And while she does not blame herself or justify, you know, his affair, she's, in my estimation, doing a really, really healthy self-analysis and doing the work of saying, wow, it's not my fault that this bad betrayal, painful betrayal happened to me. Can I accept responsibility for all of the things I've done or not done? And that's really, that reflects like my journey for the last decade. Can I do the work of understanding what I did or did not do in my marriage that resulted in my wife wanting to leave? So the worst thing that ever happened to me, I didn't necessarily make the choice for her to leave. I certainly didn't. I didn't know that I was doing that. You know, I didn't want our marriage to end, but the alternative would be for her to voluntarily remain in a relationship in which every day to her felt as if she was married to somebody who would always choose himself over her, and that she had no recourse for changing anything, because any request to him, me in this case, to change, to help, was met with, sorry, you shouldn't think or feel that in the first place.
Right.
It's, you know, I used to be somebody that I used to say I was anti-divorce. I'm not anti-divorce. I think an individual should have the ability to remove themselves from an unhealthy situation. You know, not to put too fine a point on it, but I think the kind of relationship in which a man says, I'm not responsible for that, implying that she is responsible for it, is exactly the kind of subtly abusive relationship that one want to consider not being a part of. But I don't know. I've whittled it down to, I am here for the people who want to be married and who love each other. And I want to help them if they have blind spots around ways in which they might be inadvertently sabotaging that long-term goal, which I think is, by the way, which I think is most married people. They're inadvertently sabotaging their long-term goal of staying together. And then they struggle with conversation and most importantly, with this idea of repair.
Yes, I love that
you just talks about so effectively and
100%.
Repair is such a critical idea, and I didn't know how to embrace uncomfortable conversation or conflict in my marriage with this idea of, this is my opportunity to help repair whatever pain exists, whatever wrong exists. And man, that what an effective way to build trust relationally. And I really try to encourage my people to lean into this, as difficult as it is, as counterintuitive as it feels, to lean into discomfort. It truly, in my estimation, is that antidote to the problem.
The repair piece says, I'm not going to be perfect. I can see how my behaviors impact you. And
our relationship is important, that then I can consider how can I move forward? How can we move forward with me hearing you and taking your two pieces, with me validating you, with me considering you? And then I think what you're also saying, let's label this out loud. We make mistakes in our relationship. Remove the shame. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. And this is the hugest, the biggest piece that I talk about with people. You know, you're not bad. We all make mistakes. We all struggle in this. Like, think of our relationship models. For many of us, we didn't have the models, or maybe we did, but still, we're human. We're going to make mistakes. And then once we can learn that repair, and again, repairing doesn't mean the repeated repair without behavior change. It's not the, I did this, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Right? Like the empty stories, but it's the, how do we then do? And again, and people can't see you, but you've got Terry Real's book behind you, which is fantastic. Us. Yeah. Such a good one. Eh?
Yeah. It's, I mean, I'm not all the way through. Admire the man deeply. And I've had a lot of feedback over the years that the things I talk about very closely mirror sort of Terry's approach to relationship health. I've had the good fortune to befriend one of his students. And I don't know, he's great. And I've had a lot of people I work with say, I've read Terry's books and they've helped me tremendously.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And because the piece is, it's not you versus me, it's us, it's we. And then how are we going to do this together? But that requires us to remove a lot of this. I need to be right. I need to win. And instead, I love these two pieces that you're adding in here, which is validation and consideration. Matthew, I could speak with you all day. And yet I know we're at our time, and I just want to express my gratitude to you for sharing your story and being vulnerable. Selfishly about myself here, I'm taking your vulnerability as this key message to me, because I am in this precipice where my book is coming out this fall and my story is in it, and I am like sweating in vulnerability. And I know what Brené says. I know she says to heal, we need to be vulnerable. And
yeah,
that's messy. Her
stand in the arena, stand in the arena thing from Teddy. It's beautiful and inspiring and goosebumpy. I really like it. I don't know. That's so interesting. I mean, I'm sure I shared some of the same emotions as the book was about to come out. I had become very accustomed to it because of the blog, though. I was able to wean myself into it. I don't know if there's any way I can be useful to you in the fall as your book launches. But if there were somehow some way for me to be useful to you, I hope you'll reach out and say so.
I will. I will let you know. But I just want to thank you for just being that voice and starting the blog. And while you didn't do your therapist homework to journal, you did do something so powerful and meaningful. And I know you are helping to change relationships, because, you know, we need people to be able to call us out on this and say, listen, you're invalidating. You are not considering like this. These are things that you can learn and change in your relationship, and how powerful that is for you to acknowledge that you have agency in the choices that you make.
I think there's a lot of people out there who feel wronged relationally. And I'm really talking about the person on sort of my side of the equation, like one of the men that I work with, and they feel like they keep getting in these relationships where they're being misunderstood and misjudged and ultimately mistreated and maybe sometimes left or rejected. And if we can learn the ways in which we commit these, again, these micro betrayals, and they're not bad. They're not about character. They're about habit is the word. They're about the math result of our behaviors, the impact they have on other people. Man, when you identify those and become mindful of them and then are able to take ownership and stop doing them or start doing them, depending on what it is, you don't have to ever be afraid of these toxic relationship patterns repeating themselves. The amount of like victim feeling that goes away. And, you know, if we're going to talk about like buzzwords like empowerment, I mean, I truly never had a more empowering moment than, wow, I don't ever have to be afraid of my marriage failing for the reason my marriage failed. I don't have to. I'm not saying I'm perfect and that like I couldn't have a relationship that would fail. It's very possible. But I think it's very unlikely to be because of me inadvertently harming my partner and then never doing the work of repair with them. I don't think that's possible. And I'm very proud of that title change in my life I've made over the last 10 years.
Amazing. It's amazing. Thank you so much, Matthew.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. It was a pleasure.
One of the key things that Matthew and I talk about in today's episode is around learning how to repair. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard from people that I work with that they don't know what to do after they get into a fight. And repairing is one of those key skills. It's a skill. You can learn how to do this, where you can step into feeling close and connected after the fight. And yet for so many of us, we just don't know how to do it. If this happens to be you, I have a free resource for you to check out. Go to drtracyd.com/repair and sign up for my free masterclass. I walk you through my 4 A's of what to do after the fight. But most importantly in this, I also talk about how you can feel close after that fight. And it's not what you think it is. We're not going to use more words. So I've got step-by-step instructions in there. You've got to stay until the end of the masterclass to make sure you get all of that. That's drtracyd.com/repair. I want to ask for one more thing from you. Your likes, reviews, follows, subscribes, they all help people find us here on the podcast because we are changing the way we talk about ourselves, changing the way we think about our relationships, the way we think about our own selves and our own worth. So I need your help. If you can click the stars or leave me a few lines or click subscribe, one of those ways. And of course, I'm also in my DMs on social media, on all of my channels. Reach out to me, say hello, let me know how this episode landed for you. And I will see you next week for another great session. Remember, this podcast is for educational purposes only and does not substitute for the care from a licensed mental health care provider.
Settling is not an option for me. Everything I desire is already mine. What if you can have it all? Because every day is for the girls.
Hello, hello. Welcome to For the Girls podcast, hosted by Victoria Alario for the girls who want more. Listening to For the Girls will have you ready to raise the bar, stop settling for the bare minimum, and start believing you can have it all and step into the 2.0 version of you. You can catch a new episode of For the Girls every Monday across all podcast platforms. Until next time, girls.